Hey guys, how you doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and welcome to another episode of the 30 Plus Men's Fitness podcast. I've been bringing you some wonderful guests this year, and today is like no other. I'm sat here virtually with another over 30s male coach, only just over 30, I must say, so only just qualifies. I'm very pleased to be joined today by Ben Coomer, guys. How are you, Ben?
Hello, thank you for getting me on the show, and I'm not sure whether I should celebrate the fact that I'm over 30, but seeing as I'm on your show, I will.
Yeah, you just scraped through, buddy, at the grand old age of 30, mate, you know. So, first off, mate, I know you're a busy man. It's really good to have you here. I know you're about to fly off to the... Where about you going, buddy?
Middle East, Bahrain, Qatar and Dubai to teach.
Excellent. It's not bad work if you can get it, is it?
It's all right. No, I'm doing
all right. Excellent, dude. Okay, so, guy, Ben, I always say the guys that are sort of listening to my podcast, they're regular, busy, over 30s men, careers, kids. Some of them will just be coming into my funnel and just be sort of catching up on the podcast. They may not have their ear to the ground as much as others, so therefore they might not follow fitness as actively as some of my other listeners. So for these guys that have been living under a rock or are just getting into things, who is Ben Coomer? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm primarily a nutritionist, a coach as well. I do a lot of teaching and I do a lot of speaking around the UK and events and stuff like that. And I've got a big mouth online. So if you went on social media and stuck my name in, you'd find me very active, especially on Facebook. And I got into the fitness industry because I used to be obese, left school, was a really obese lad. My battle to get kind of fit and healthy was tough. It wasn't easy. I suffered with IBS, ADHD, and eczema, you know, the classic didn't sleep very well, all that kind of stuff that a lot of people are suffering from.
Yeah.
And it was through really struggling with that journey that it got me into fitness. And then after going away traveling and finding myself, as many people do, you find yourself in faraway lands. I came home and said I was going to get into the fitness industry.
Yeah.
I was currently in kind of an acting career. And for the last 10 years, I've just been progressing as primarily a nutritionist, but try to be a bit of a kind of motivational character as well to try and elicit change in people.
Excellent, buddy. So you went away traveling sort of 19 years old and you were, was that the right age? That was the age you're at? So you're quite overweight. You come back and so you decided, right, I want to make a change here. So you've only actually been in the industry just over 10 years. Wow, mate, that's some serious growth. So what was your... what was your first point of call? Who did you turn to?
Paul Check. Right. He has written a great book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy. I really like it. That was the book I got given when I was really struggling with my journey. A guy said, read this. I read it in the space of a week, and I lost 4 stone in 4 months from following the principles.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was just about getting back to basics, sleeping properly, moving properly, eating a whole food diet, cutting out a lot of the things. At the time, I had IBS related to gluten and dairy, so I brought them out of the diet, felt a ton better, it made me look and feel better, and a culmination of all that stuff, I just started to become, really awesome.
We'll talk about that, the whole gluten and dairy thing a little bit later on, because there's always a lot of controversy about things like that. Are they good? Are they not good? Should we eliminate them? But let's go back a little bit further. Because you said there that you really struggled with your weight, and I can really empathise with that because that's the sort of battle I went through and eventually led me to become sort of get into the fitness industry because I wanted to find out, what would work, apply it on myself and then help others, which is what I ultimately did. But, growing up, let's go right back to your early teens. Were you struggling then with your weight? Were you playing any sports? Where did these battles really begin?
Mate, I ate too much. It's as simple as that. Yeah. I was always into sport. I was lucky enough to go to private school, so I always played cricket, tennis, rugby, football, everything.
Yeah.
And I just went into the dinner hall and ate everything in front of me. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Put that alongside the food intolerances and I was really overweight.
So where do you think the overeating came from? Because I think I've done a lot of work on myself and I realised that I actually started to overeat at a period in my life where I moved away from an area where my friends were and I was only 9 or 10 years old. So I could no longer go out and play with them in the street because I moved too far away, and I got lonely and I ended up playing sort of video games, and the overeating kind of started then. Would you say there was a point that triggered you to start overeating, or it was just all the sports you were playing and you couldn't sort of equate for the volume of food?
No, I think I just didn't really understand what was going in my mouth. I'd always been aware of healthy eating. I never ate junk food as a kid either. Like, right. I wasn't someone that would eat half a pack of biscuits or loads of sweets, but I would just eat a lot of it, like sausages, chips, breads, puddings, salads, all sorts of stuff. I loved it. And, you know, when you're a hungry kid and you walk into a buffet, you eat food.
Yeah. Okay, so at 18, 19 years old, what kind of shape were you in? How heavy were you then, Ben?
So I started off at 16 stone. Yeah. I went down to 10 and a half stone. And then I was like, right, I need to look hench.
Right,
and then went on the...
Right, okay, so you were at 16 stone when you started your journey.
Yeah.
You read Paul Check's book, went really... And guys, if you haven't read it, it was one of the first books I read, Eat, Move and Be Healthy. Really, really good book. And then... You dropped 4 stone in 4 months, but you actually went down to 10 stone.
Yeah, I went down to 10 and a half. So lost four stone in 4 months, then lost another stone and a half. That took a bit longer, you know, eking out that last bit of fat loss. Then I looked like a bean pole, and then I was like, right, I need to stick some muscle on. Yeah. And over the preceding years, built about three stone of muscle.
Excellent, dude. Okay, so look, the guys are going to really want to find out the nitty-gritty to behind this weight loss. Because like I said to you, a lot of guys are just coming in. They're keen to learn about nutrition. They're doing things wrong. You said you removed dairy. You said you removed gluten. But what are the other things that you did where after you read Paul Check's book? Because you said, oh, yeah, like I look to improve sleep. But how did all this happen? How did you put it all together, dude?
So a lot of the principles in the book is about finding what fuels you best as a person.
Right.
I found out that I didn't really work very well on carbohydrate-based food, so I started to follow quite a low-carb diet. Started to give me a lot more energy. I was obviously eating a lot more natural foods as well. And through that, I naturally created a bit of a calorie deficit.
Sure.
I wasn't eating as much food. I was still exercising a lot. So, I mean, I never counted a calorie in my life till I was probably about 24, 25.
Yeah.
So I just had a simple approach, control my food intake, eat real food, exercise, try and sleep a lot, drink a lot of healthy water, don't get shit-faced too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, that worked for me absolutely fine. And it wasn't until I got to my mid-20s that I started to get a lot into my own physical performance.
Right.
I wanted to be stronger, faster. I didn't want, you know, I was now quite lean and I was going from one day looking really good, the next day, like, looking not quite as good. Because of how I, you know, not really controlled my food intake as well.
Right.
And that's where I started to get, you know, involved in calories a bit more and just fine-tuning my inner athlete.
Yeah.
I wanted more as a person. And to this day, I still count the calories that I eat. I'm not super religious about it. I'm not tracking everything. But I know that I need X amount of food.
Sure.
And I give my body X amount of food. And that ensures that, A, I don't put on weight, but also... I don't lose weight, which will cause me to have insufficient recovery.
Yeah.
And because I train a lot, that's important.
I think this is really interesting. Two good points you made there, Ben. First off, you talked about you didn't really track calories initially. This is something that we tell a lot of our clients when they come into our program, you know. We don't want to confuse them initially. You might have a guy who's coming into the program, he's 20 stone, he just needs to get up off the couch and get moving. I don't need to concern that guy with macros as such. I just need to put healthy food into his body, i.e. the kind of stuff that's recommended in Paul Check's book. And then I sort of say to him, there comes a point where we can start looking at tracking your calories, looking at your macros. So in our online programs, we actually have like starter fat loss programs where we're just getting these guys to drink more water, start using their body, you know, up their protein, their greens, and just move, you know, to eventually going into like barbell based programs where we've got them tracking everything if they want, you know. Another interesting thing you said is that you actually found that you worked out better on lower carbs and a higher fat. And I remember watching one of your videos a while back and it said, you know, should I have oats for breakfast or should I have bacon and eggs? And it's really about finding what works for you, right? And this is really interesting because I tell this story to my clients. I used to have a driving job before I was in this industry 10 years ago. And every lunchtime I'd go and get a big jacket potato. But as I was on my afternoon deliveries driving that van, I was almost falling asleep. All right. That doesn't mean a jacket potato is bad. It just means that it wasn't working for me. Now, I could have had a sweet potato, same volume, and I'd have been absolutely fine. Doesn't mean one's bad. Doesn't mean one is good. It just meant that's what worked for me, right? Mm-hmm. So as individuals, right, I think it's really important. Like you said, you really perform well on a higher fat diet, right?
Initially. I did at the time. Right. I'm kind of in the middle now. I'd say I'm moderate carb. Just eat them at different times of the day.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think there's a lot of people that get, initially, they're getting too into the nitty gritty of, can I have this? Can I have this? What about this? What about this? And the bottom line is, you know, there's going to be certain foods that give you more nourishment than others. But the bottom line is, you know, we need to be looking at maintaining a calorie deficit if you're looking to lose body fat, but also finding what works for you at certain periods of the day, right? And there's not a one size fits all, so to speak.
No. And I think with any fitness journey, you have to develop fitness intuition. You have to start to listen to your body, know how it responds. There's no point, you know, I can write a diet plan, a training plan for someone, but that only teaches you so much. That teaches you how to follow something. Mm. You now need to listen. How do those foods work for you? What happened when you did strength training? Do you prefer cardio? How flexible? Like all these things you've just got to listen to and develop your personal intuition around fitness. So long term that you can manage this stuff by yourself, because my clients and your clients should not be with us for years and years and years, because that means we haven't taught them what to do for the preceding years and years and years.
Do you know what? I love that, because I saw somebody else post about saying, look, you know, you're exactly what you said. Your client shouldn't be with you. They should learn enough to move on. And there's a fantastic story of a guy I worked with. I won't name him last year. And he just took everything and just absorbed it. It was like a sponge. And he ended up losing 5 stone. But not only that, got himself enrolled to become a nutritionist. And I almost think he ended up training with me as he felt he owed me. And I was like, listen, I said, dude, you don't need to keep paying me. He'd gone from like doing like 4 or 5 sessions a week to just one. And I could just see like this guy just got it. He was going, he was playing tennis, he was doing spin. He was intermittent fasting, he was tracking his calories. And we had a little messenger group on Facebook. And I said to him, look, you don't have to keep coming. You don't owe me anything. You've done really well. Like, you can just go away and fly now, dude. I'm not going to be offended. This is like a complete success story for me. So I want to go back again, Ben, to, because this is really interesting, that whole journey where you lost 4 stone and then went on to lose another 2 stone. Like, how massive was that a change on you? Not just in terms of the weight loss, but what areas of your life did you see improve? Because your energy must have just been insane.
Everything. Energy improved, self-confidence improved, the way I look improved, and that just started to fuel my desire to keep doing more. Now, the point I want to get across in this is, you know, people talk about obsession in fitness. Oh, you're obsessed. Like, you know, you need to chill out a bit. I believe you need to get a little bit obsessed. You need to get a little bit of tunnel vision and, you know, you commit to it. When I said, I'm going to do it, I did it. I didn't fuck about and say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow or anything like that. I turned up to the gym 5-6 days a week. I bought the food I needed to eat. I did everything properly. And then, you know, there was definitely a slightly difficult transition period where I had to work out what maintenance felt like for me. Like, I'd achieved my initial goal and now I don't need to be quite as hardcore. But I think you need to go all in. And also, I don't really want to mess about. Like, if I want to lose body fat, I'd rather do a diet in 3 or 4 months than 6 or 9 months, because it's just prolonging the inevitable. If I'm overweight, I need to just accept it and lose the weight and crack on with it. So, you know, the reason why I lost so much weight in such a short period of time is because I committed it, I wanted it, and I actioned it.
This is really interesting. This is really interesting, because there is a school of thought now. Like, again, it comes down to the individual, doesn't it? It's like, I've seen some clients come into my programs, they get it, they're like, and you tend to get this with new clients, right? They're so motivated, you give them the information and they're 100 miles an hour and they're just lapping it up. And in the back of my mind, I think, ooh, there's a crash coming here. They're maybe going too hard out of the blocks. Perhaps I should, you know, sort of have a conversation and say, don't be too strict. And then you see it, they find it hard to maintain. But having said that, like you said, some people want that. They want that. Look, I want to lose weight. I want it quicker than others, right? So there's, I suppose what I'm getting at is there's something the guys that want to come out of the traps and do it a little bit more aggressively and then learn how to maintain like you, and we'll talk about that. But then there's also something to be said for the kind of slow and steady wins the race, which in essence could possibly help people create better, more sustainable habits in the long term, right?
Yeah, and this is where us as coaches need to be respective and receptive to what people want, how they want it, and their understanding and drivers. Like, you know, there's always going to be a clear divide. People will go off on the journey and embrace it, and people will struggle with the journey. And the people that struggle with the journey, they need a little bit of more emotional support. They need help clarifying their whys. They need help digging into their environment. Like, I, as a guy that wanted to change, just changed my environment. I didn't care what I needed to change, I changed it.
Right.
Some people will struggle with that. They'll struggle because, so for example,
yeah, explain
a classic
that.
Family environment is, oh, I can't help but snack on junk food because it's in the house. And they'll find it hard to get it out of the house because they've got kids and their husband might want it, for example.
Yeah, my lads will resonate with this massively, yeah.
Exactly. So you've got a decision. You start to change the whole environment. And realistically, we need to say to ourselves, well, should, let's just say someone's got a crisp fetish and they're eating
two
packs
a day. Yeah, that was me, dude. That was me, yeah.
I love crisps as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to say, okay, well, should the rest of my family be eating them? Can I find an alternative? What kind of measures can I bring into place to safeguard myself? Because they're almost a bit of a binge trigger food. These kind of people just need to work harder at their environment, and we need to develop the self-confidence and self-will to be able to stick up for what they want. They're quite often people that will be led astray by other people and other environments, and play to the emotions of other people before their emotions. And it's just a different journey. It's a different coaching approach.
Mm. Yeah, I think this is because it comes down a lot. Change obviously comes down a lot to the mindset. And you mentioned the crisp thing there, and you're totally right. I mean, I've got two young boys. Anyone who says that they feed their kids all natural all the time is a complete liar. I was one of those before they come along that said, you know, they're only going to eat organic. And then some days they're screaming so much, it's like, just give them the biscuit, just to quiet them down. But yeah, we used to have crisps in the house, and I was terrible for that. I've actually got over it now. I if I got in the crisps, it would be six bags later. But the problem was, is that my eldest boy, I could see was picking up those bad habits, and I had to nip it in the bud in like 2015, and I did. I realised it was something that I had from a very young age, like I said to you, when I moved away and became lonely, and it was still there. And actually, the pressure of having a young family and the fact that I was knackered was actually leading me to start binging on these kind of junk foods. So in the end, we had to get them out of the house. And it was a tough decision because the kids always thought crisps were there, but I was noticing that my son was actually having one bag of crisps and then going straight back, Mummy, can I have another? Can I have three or four bags of crisps? And it's funny because they're like sponges and they start to pick up these habits from an early age. And I think this is really interesting when we're talking about the whole mindset thing. It's like the people around you, if the people around you are saying, yeah, it's okay, you know, Mark, Ben, we like you with a little bit of extra weight on you. Go on, just have that biscuit. What do you mean you're not drinking? That's boring. Come on. And it's almost like they're offended because you're not joining the party of, you know, what they're up to. Would you agree?
Definitely. There's so much social pressure, especially when you're an adult. And a lot of adult social time does revolve around drink and food, especially if you're in a busy family. You get one night off, you go round your friends, they're cooking dinner, they're serving alcohol. And the chances are, if you didn't have a control mechanism, you would overindulge to a point that you will put on some body fat.
Yeah.
They cook a lasagna, they have some garlic bread, you have two or three gin and tonics, and
boom.
You know, it's easy to eat 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 calories extra. And we need to have the self-confidence to say, oh, actually, I'm an adult. I can make my own decisions.
Yeah.
I can stand up for what I need to do. And if your friends or your environment are kind of pushing you to say, oh, you know, just have this, just eat that, then really that's not a reflection on you. That's a reflection on them and where they're at. And they need to have their kind of, you know, lifestyle choices kind of gratified by you as well. And this is why people do it. It makes them feel better.
Yeah. This is really interesting, because when I had my CBT, I used to talk to the guy, and I've been very open about this, Ben, in the past. I really struggled. And I said to him, like, I would sometimes fear social occasions because I was trying to be the ultra clean eater and I'd be worried about binging. But then also in my head, it was like, well, unless I'm not eating all the food and drinking all the beers, then I'm going to have a crap time. It's not going to be fun, because that was just the way my head was kind of wired. And it's actually realizing that you can actually go and enjoy the social occasion without eating like 3,000 calories of pizza and drinking 10 beers. And I think one of the interesting things now, especially we'll talk about the whole tracking calories in the age of like MyFitnessPal, it's so easy, and I've started to do it. It's like, I fancy a beer. Okay, so for example, on Saturday night, been out all day with the kids, we've been in the park, had a great day, fancied a beer. And it's never going to be a big piss up with two young kids, but I fancied a Peroni. So all I do is I actually type those calories into MyFitnessPal. Oh, a Peroni's got 235 calories. So if I have two, that's 470 calories. If I have some crisps with it, and it just allows us in this day and age to be a lot more mindful, because we massively underestimate what we're putting in our body, right, in terms of calories. Would you agree?
100%. Ultimately, and this is the hard and dire truth, we all have choices.
Yeah.
You can sit down and you can have free beers and have some crisps and eat what you want, but you will get overweight. Yeah. That's the simple fact. Or you sit down and say, I do want the beer, but I'm going to have to forego something else. I'm going to have a leaner dinner.
Yeah.
I might have to have some chicken and some vegetables while I have two beers.
Yeah.
And that is just the reality. Like, I can't sugarcoat it anymore. But there are strategies we can use.
Yes.
You've already highlighted them. So, for example, I'm just like anyone. I'll probably go out Friday evening for dinner, Saturday evening for dinner. I know that I'm going to be confronted with a menu that I'm going to want to eat. A steak or a burger and chips and have a couple of beers. So I try and eat pretty lean during the day. So I'll only eat like 800 calories throughout the day.
Save
it'll be good food, like a big salad with some chicken in it to make sure I'm, you know, hitting that kind of nutrient quota. And then I'll go out in the evening and I'll be like, right, I've got plenty of room for a big steak and two beers. Boom, bring it on.
Yeah, this is great. And there's something that I had a conversation with recently with one of my clients at a retreat we did, and he was really struggling. He'd lost a lot of weight, he tanked it back on, and he was struggling with this whole concept of trying to be too clean, which we'll talk about the whole clean eating thing. And I said to him, look, he was worried that socially he still wouldn't be able to take his wife out and things like that. I said to him, look, you can go out for a three-course meal on a Saturday night with your wife in the evening. You can even have a couple of glasses of wine. But in the day, just maybe don't have breakfast, maybe have a light lunch, and get 15,000 steps in and a gym session. Boom. You've created enough room to go and enjoy yourself. And I think as well, it's the day after. Let's say, because, you know, some people will do stuff on impulse. They won't plan to go out and get shit-faced, but it'll be a nice sunny day. They'll get invited somewhere. Next thing, they've had 3,000 calories of alcohol and food. Well, great thing that Simon Hall said to me on a recent podcast was most people the next day will sit in their own shit, right? So they'll wake up and they go, well, diet's fucked now. I really blew it last night. So it's a Sunday, I'm hungover. I'm just going to eat crap all day and I'll start again on Monday. You know, a lot of my clients termed a coin in the past FSM, Fresh Start Monday, when actually you can claw that back on a Sunday by throwing in a mini fast. Again, going for a long walk, maybe loading your roast with a load of veggies and going about your business and reducing your calories, getting to bed a little bit earlier on the Sunday. Would you agree?
100%. 100%. And what we can't get away from is the reality is the reality.
Right.
Like, we didn't used to have these problems, but we live in a different world. We live in a world where we all sit on our asses every day.
Yeah.
We commute everywhere. With you know, overindulgent food is everywhere. Our environment has changed. Wind back 40 years, we were all doing manual jobs, moving all day. Didn't have the opportunity to eat six bags of crisps because it didn't exist. You know, we had to eat kind of, you know, within our means, our financial restrictions.
Yeah.
So environments have changed. So we can't live in this overconsumption world and expect not to get the ramifications of it.
Yeah, totally. Totally do. Okay, so we're talking about this kind of inactivity. You know, one thing I've noticed, I bought myself a Fitbit at Christmas, and I'm really into this whole gamification. I talk about it a lot. Is getting people to increase their NEAT and things like that. And what was frighteningly alarming to me is how little some of my clients move with office jobs. And I'm so grateful that, you know, I'm coaching, I've got two kids, I'm running around, I can organize my my time to actually, I'll average about 15 to 17,500 steps a day. And people will look at me and go, wow, that's incredible. I'm like, that's just a normal day for me, just coaching in the gym and running around after the kids in the evening. But then you hear of people that are office jobs and you may be inviting them to the daily, you know, games. They're doing 2,000 steps a day. And it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening how little we move. And it's no wonder, like you said, that people are putting on weight. I mean, have you bought into this whole Fitbit and the whole gamification thing? What are your thoughts on that, Ben?
No, because there's a massive part of me that actually hates technology.
This is interesting.
I love technology for the purpose of doing my job.
Right.
You know, communicating with the world, doing podcasts, Facebook. But apart from that, I'm a big fan of detaching myself from technology because I find it all too consuming. But I'm fully aware that I work from home and I could sit on my ass as well and only do 500 steps.
Yeah.
So I got a dog. For a start, I love dogs, but it makes sure I get out twice a day for 20 minutes and walks the dog.
Brilliant.
I've got a static exercise bike in my office. So if I've ever taken a phone call or just doing some social updates, I'll sit on the exercise bike while I do it. And I'm just constantly trying to find hacks in my lifestyle to be more active because I know how beneficial being active is.
This is really interesting. I spoke to Nick Orton, obviously from Body Power, who you know, I know you talk there. And he was actually saying that he's such a busy guy, he will actually do meetings and he'll be on his watt bike. And he'll do them in the gym at Body Power and be on his watt bike and have his whole team there just doing Q&As and meetings. And I think, well, you know, if needs must, needs must. And I think I'm trying to tell a lot of my clients now, look, get off the bus a stop earlier. You know, walk to the shop, take the stairs. All these little simple things, like you said, little hacks that can drastically increase the extra calorie burn, right? And they're very simple steps, aren't they? I think people get over-consumed and think, shit, I've got to get fit. I've got to join a gym. Oh, stress. I don't want people to look at me. When actually, there's a lot simpler ways that we can get moving, right?
There is. And I think what we need to look at is the gym is an hour of our day. This is what we're getting at. Like, you can go to the gym and do an hour of weight training. You might only burn 300 calories during that weight training. And if you sat on your ass all day, you know, that's not enough to negate the fact that you might go home and have a, you know, lasagna and cheesy garlic bread. Mm. That's just the reality. So, you know, our daily burn is probably the biggest impact we can have on our weight loss and even our maintenance success with our diet.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Okay, buddy. So going back to yourself, you were talking a little bit about how you massively changed the environment that you're in. All right, so let's just go back to there because this will really give the guys some good tips. What were the biggest things that you did when you initially lost this weight? We're going to come on to your journey with strength training in a second, but what were the main things that you did to change the environment? Because you're only a young lad. You must have had a big social, you know, I remember when I was 20, I was in uni, I was going out pissing it up pretty much every other night.
Yeah, big thing was is I exercised a lot. I probably exercised too much. I was in the gym for about 2 hours a day. And that was just my commitment. I did an hour of core training. Yeah. No, sorry, half an hour of core training, an hour of weights, and then half an hour of cardio. And that was my structure. And, you know, it worked. I had a big calorie burn. It helped burn a lot of fat for me. I bought all the right food. And don't get me wrong, I was getting pissed up quite a bit because I worked in a bar at a weekend. I worked two jobs at the time.
Right.
And at Friday and Saturday night, I worked in a bar. But again, I was in a bar on my feet all night running around. I was a van driver. I was a print apprentice. This is going right back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, just my energy output was huge. And I made a commitment to be moving a lot. I made a commitment to buy the right food. I made a commitment to say, well, if I'm not going out drinking, there's no point having alcohol. You know, I just have water or tea or whatever. And they were probably my big lifestyle things at the time because I was young. You know, I didn't have responsibility. I'm not going to lie. I didn't have kids and didn't have to worry about too much. I didn't have to change an awful lot.
Sure.
But what I did change is the commitment to myself and my health.
Sure. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit before you discovered the whole sort of strength training and gaining muscle. You went down, so you were 16, so you went up to 12. What was it like losing that last 2 stone, getting to 10 stone? Because the lightest I can remember myself in my sort of 20s is about sort of 12 and a half stone, and I was pretty fucking lean then. I was running all the half marathons, all the 10Ks. I mean, how tall are you?
5'8½.
Right, so you've gone down to 10 stone, dude. I mean, what sort of calories were you working off?
I don't know, because I wasn't tracking food to that degree at the time. How did I keep on going? I think I just kept on working at it.
Yeah.
I keep just pushing myself. I didn't have enough nutrition knowledge at the time to say, well, let's just fine tune the diet a little bit. I probably just, you know, kept going a little bit harder in the gym and kept pushing my body a little bit. But because I was consistent and I had the commitment, it didn't matter. I got it done.
Sure. Okay, so you get to 10 and a half stone. What were you looking like? Could you see your abs?
Yeah, I could see my abs, but, you know, they weren't that big because, remember, the abs are still a muscle.
Yeah.
So if you lose all your fat and your abs don't look great, you still don't have enough muscle mass to make them look great.
Sure.
And that's one reason I did so much core training, is I wanted big, strong abs.
Right.
And yeah, I've got massive abs now.
All right. So tell me about how you discovered the strength training. Let's sort of move on in your journey. Who was it that you turned to when you got into strength training? Tell us a little bit more about your journey over the last 10 years.
I'll be honest, I think it was more of a natural progression.
Right.
You become fit. I was playing a strength-based sport.
Right.
It was aggressive, rugby. Rugby's my sport. And, you know, you naturally sort of say to yourself, well, I want to be stronger. I'm a guy. Guys need to be strong.
Yep.
I've never been in an environment where I've been forced to develop strength. Like, you know, you know the classic farmer. You know, you've got a mate who's a farmer and he's as strong as an ox because he's just grown up lifting hay bales and cars.
Yep.
I never had that. So I just wanted to get into it to improve my rugby, and then I knew that that was the path to looking aesthetically a lot better.
Yeah,
like I wanted to look like the men's health cover man or whatever.
Sure.
I mean, it means I need to lift weights.
Yeah. So what sort of programs did you follow? What sort of programs have you followed over the years, Ben?
Just everything,
honestly.
Classic bodybuilding splits, upper lower body splits, powerlifting programs, strongman programs. I've got a bit of training ADHD.
Right.
And I just love variety.
Sure.
I like trying different things. I like adventure. I like movement. So, you know, I religiously change my training program every 4 to 5 weeks.
Right. And tell us how your nutrition changed when you started to really get into the strength training.
I just fine-tuned it. That's when I got more interested in sports nutrition. I had to understand what a calorie was, what the volume of protein, fats and carbs I was eating to support training load.
Yep.
I then had to be a little bit more concerned about micronutrition to make sure I was getting enough omega-3, vitamin D and magnesium for recovery. But, you know, that was probably the bulk of it.
Sure. Okay, so, I mean, I remember listening to some of your very early podcasts, and again, you weren't talking about sort of actively tracking calories and things like that. How do you think you've evolved as a coach in terms of from the moment you started to where you are now? How have you evolved?
I think I've come to appreciate the specificity that I can go into as a coach. I've also kind of developed that I've understood the mind. I think the mind is a massive thing in the whole weight loss, health building journey.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it already, but, you know, why do people want to change? What beliefs do they have? What emotional roadblocks do they have? Like, you know, most of us know what is good for us and what is bad for us.
Yeah.
But the key thing is why do we do it?
Yeah.
We know crisps are not great for us.
Yeah.
We know broccoli is great for us. But why do we choose crisps over broccoli?
Sure.
Is it a taste thing? Is it an environment thing? Is it a comfort thing? Is it a reward thing? So I think as a coach, I've learned how to deal with the different kind of people I might meet and how I implement different strategies around that. And really, more than anything, how to fine tune someone to kind of be their everyday athlete.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because when people get started on a journey, their motivation is always extremely high, right? So I've done it many times. You sit down, you set a goal, you're so pumped up, you're motivated. And then what happens is that something will happen. You'll be knackered. The kids will be up in the night. And then, you know, you've got all these things going on, like, you know, you're producing more cortisol, your ghrelin levels are high. I mean, that's something that really hit me when the kids were born, was the years of no sleep. And my ghrelin was just like through the roof. I was just like so craving junk. And I was trying to be this kind of ultra clean eater, right? And I was trying to be this ultra clean eater and basically just ended up in like junk, ending up in crisps. And I suppose it's, like I said to you, it's very easy. People want it, but then we have to account for the fact that life can throw curveballs at us, right?
Yeah, and I think at that point you need to take the pressure off yourselves in the, you know, the most important thing in life at that point in time might be your work, might be your family.
Sure.
That doesn't mean you need to go completely off the rails. And people quite often do this when they can't exercise. Let's say you get an ankle injury. It's like, oh, I'm injured, so I'm just going to eat what I want for 6 weeks. Well, that means at the end of 6 weeks, you've now got to work double hard because you put on a stone.
Yeah.
There was no point in that. Don't get me wrong, it's going to be a little bit harder, but take the pressure off yourself. Life has changed.
Yeah.
Accept that there's something more important in your life right now than there was previously and what you were focusing on. And just know that when the time is right, it'll evolve and you'll be able to put that same amount of effort that you were putting in before to get yourself to where you want to get to.
Sure, absolutely, Ben. Okay, great stuff. I know we've got about another 5 minutes before we wrap up, Ben. So I want to put you on the spot. And I want you there's a lot of lots of misconceptions in the industry. I get a lot of guys coming in asking all kinds of crazy questions. And it was the same as what was going on in my head in my 20s when I really didn't understand a lot. What do you think are the three top nutrition or fitness industry myths that need to die, that need to be eradicated?
Probably you need to not eat carbohydrates to lose fat.
Yeah.
If you work well on carbohydrates, awesome, eat them. Ultimately, yeah. Calorie balance is still king. Yeah. How we create that calorie balance is the most important thing for people. More myths. Eating small and often is more beneficial to fat loss. It's not like if you want to eat 3 square meals a day, awesome. If you want to eat 10 small meals a day, awesome, do it.
Yeah.
And I can't think of another myth, but ultimately, what you and me want to get across is you need to find something that works for you.
Yeah.
And there are many rules in fitness and nutrition, but everything can work. You know, it might not be the best for some people to skip breakfast, but you can skip breakfast and lose body fat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just eat the right thing at the right times. So ultimately, there's perfect things and then there's 80%. And if most people can get to 80%, they're going to live a pretty fulfilling life, look pretty good and feel pretty good.
Yeah, excellent. Great advice, buddy. All right, before we wrap up, Ben, tell us a little bit more about what you've got coming up. Tell us a little bit more about the seminars. Tell us a little bit more about the online training that you offer in the academy, etc., etc.
If people want to find me, I'm pretty available across the internet. Ben Coomber, COOMBER. Facebook is my main stomping ground. Post a lot of videos and blogs and stories and thoughts that people can just get stuck into. My main information pathway is the podcast. It's the UK's number one rated. That's Ben Coomber Radio. Careful though, there's over 256 episodes there. Otherwise, you know, if you start to sift around, you'll find some cool stuff. I'm now going on a UK tour to deliver seminars. I have a supplement company, Awesome Supplements. We run education online. There's tons of stuff. If you like what I've said today, have a route around. You'll find some cool stuff.
Brilliant, buddy. Okay, and so just before we wrap up, let's say I've got an over 30s man. He's just tuned into my podcast. He hasn't trained in ages. He's knackered. He's burnt out. He's not eating very well. What quick tips would you give him just to get him moving, buddy?
I'd say to get him moving, just get out and walk. Get out and walk and have a stretch and make your body feel better and then get to bed on time. Sleep just positively affects everything. Sleep gives you more motivation, less cravings. It helps everything.
Yep. Good stuff, Ben. All right, Ben, listen, I really appreciate you coming on today, buddy. We've had a great 40 minutes of value. None of it was pre-planned. We just sort of had banter along the way. So I really appreciate you coming on, mate.
And
guys, I hope you got some value from it. So that was myself, Coach Treggs, founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and Ben Coomber. Guys, if you like it, please give us a mention. Please leave a comment on iTunes and give us a share. And we really appreciate it. Guys, don't just listen and don't go in and plug in some of the great value that we've given today. Go on, plug in and make some changes, guys, and we really hope that you get the benefits from it. So from myself, thanks for tuning in, and also from Ben as well. Ben, really appreciate it, dude, and we'll talk to you soon, guys. Keep trucking.